This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy February. Gilbert and Sullivan once noted that it's a good thing February is short because it's a very beastly month. Of course, that music we heard was not Gilbert and Sullivan. We wanted to play you something warm. That was Bally High from the musical South Pacific, and see if you can guess its free thought significance.
I'll tell you in a moment. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. And this is indeed February. It's February the 1st, 2014, broadcast of Free Thought Radio.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we're broadcasting here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're also playing in five other states. And if you're listening, thank you, and perhaps you're catching our podcast. FFRF has two purposes: to protect the constitutional principle of separation between religion and government, and to promote non-theism. And we have almost or thereabouts 20,000 members in North America, and we hope today you will join us at FFRF.org.
So why did we start the show with Bally High? There's actually two reasons, two free thought reasons, or two and a half reasons. The first one is this week is the birthday of the novelist James Michener, who was born on February the 3rd, 1907. James Michener wrote many books, many historical fiction books, including Tales of the South Pacific, on which the musical South Pacific was based.
And of course, James Michener was a non-believer.
James Michener was interviewed by Parade magazine in 1991, and he said this: "I am a humanist because I think humanity can, with constant moral guidance, create a reasonably decent society. I am terrified of restrictive religious doctrine, having learned from history that when men who adhere to any form of it are in control, common men like me are in peril. So I'm a humanist. And if you want to charge me with being the most virulent kind, a secular humanist, I accept the accusation."
And then there's other free thought connections to South Pacific as well, aren't there?
Well, we definitely know that Richard Rodgers, the composer of the musical, was an atheist because he said so. We don't know for sure if Oscar Hammerstein II, who was the lyricist, considered himself an atheist. He didn't make any quotes about it, but Oscar Hammerstein lived his life as a totally non-religious person. He wasn't married in a church or a synagogue. He wrote no religious music. He didn't have a religious funeral. He worked with the atheist Richard Rodgers and Stephen Sondheim. So I think we can safely call Oscar Hammerstein II an honorary freethinker, at least.
And speaking of music, we will pay tribute later in the show to another great music maker, folk singer Pete Seeger, who died this week at 94. And we're going to talk with a full-blown freethinker, Scott Burdick. Scott is an artist, a professional painter who displays in many galleries around the country, and also, to our luck as freethinkers, a filmmaker whose most recent documentary is In Reason We Trust, mainly documenting the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C., but there's a lot of other things that he has done films about.
Well, we'll talk with him about it. Many other issues. He got to travel, Scott Burdick got to travel with the Herald Camping Ministry, if you remember them from 2011, Herald Camping Ministry, who were announcing the end of the world in 2011. He got to go into their motorhomes and spend their last 3 days of the universe with them. That should be interesting to talk about.
So the world may have ended in 2011, and actually, of course, did end for Harold Camping last December when he died. But FFRF is still here, and we're fighting that battle of church and state, and there is big news in this past week.
First, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, working with noted state church attorney Marcy A. Hamilton and groups advocating for the rights of victims of religious abuse, filed an important amicus brief before the United States Supreme Court this last Monday. The brief opposes Hobby Lobby's claim, which will be heard before the Supreme Court on March the 25th, that for-profit corporations have a right to deny contraceptive coverage to women workers based on religious objections. The Hobby Lobby chain of stores is arguing that it is a person under the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, as we can call it. And they're arguing that the federal government's contraceptive insurance mandate imposes a substantial burden, they say, on their corporation's claimed Christian beliefs.
And the reason it's so appropriate that Marcy Hamilton wrote this brief for us is that she successfully argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1997 that RFRA was unconstitutional as it applied to state and local governments, but that case didn't consider the constitutionality of RFRA as it applies federally. So in our amicus brief, Hamilton and we at FFRF argue that the federal RFRA is unconstitutional and that this unconstitutionality has been lost in the intense public debate between claimed religious liberty for-profit corporations and women's reproductive health.
And we're pleased to note that FFRF's brief, amicus brief before the U.S. Supreme Court, is also signed by bishopaccountability.org, Children's Healthcare is a Legal Duty, commonly known as CHILD, the Child Protection Project, the Foundation to Abolish Child Sex Abuse, Survivors for Justice, and SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests.
And as we stated in this Friend of the Court brief, FFRF's interest in the case arises from our position that it is a radical redefinition of the concept of religious liberty to say that that includes a right to impose one's religious beliefs on others, on unwilling others, by the way, and that arguably this is the greatest threat to individual freedom of conscience. And we note in our brief that FFRF's original founders, which is myself and my mother, Ann Nicole Gaylor, formed FFRF partly in response to unwarranted governmental and religious intrusion into women's reproductive health decisions. So in other words, our eyes were opened about the dangers of patriarchal religious positions being imposed in civil law because of this religious battle against contraception and abortion rights.
Hobby Lobby was founded by David Green, who claims a religious objection to some forms of prescription contraception, and essentially maintains that his corporation has a soul and rights of conscience that trump the rights of conscience of his employees. Absurdly, he claims that some forms of the pill... some forms of the pill are an abortifacient, even though science proves that he's wrong. And the College of Obstetrics and Gynecology have briefed the courts on why he's wrong. Green runs a chain of more than 500 craft stores. He's challenging the contraceptive mandate of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. As you know, that law requires health care plans to provide coverage for certain preventive care at no additional charge, including immunizations, diabetes screening, AIDS screening, and contraception.
So in our brief, Hamilton notes that RFRA, this federal act, is being invoked by Hobby Lobby as a license to influence their female employees' contraceptive choices, actually to deny them choices. And so if Hobby Lobby could deploy RFRA to block coverage of women's contraception choices, then the next religious employer will argue against covering vaccinations, and the next against screenings for children or domestic violence screenings and counseling. And there's really no end to the variety of religious believers in the United States and how they would make the vulnerable pay the price of their claim that their religious liberty trumps everything. And essentially, this is fomenting a culture war, and that's what our brief before the Supreme Court said. So we said this is unconstitutional.
Marcy Hamilton, the attorney who wrote our brief, holds the Paul R. Virkle Chair in Public Law at Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law And she's the author of the book, God Versus the Gavel, Religion and the Rule of Law. She'll be on our show next month in March prior to the oral argument, so we'll look forward to that interview.
So we find ourselves in the novel position for once of siding with the federal government, and in this case, Kathleen Sebelius, who's Secretary of Health and Human Services.
And we can find our brief online at FFRF's page, the amicus brief.
Look for the news link, yeah.
Now, other breaking news. As expected, the federal government filed notice at the end of January that it is appealing the Freedom From Religion Foundation's significant federal court victory here in Madison, Wisconsin, that declares the parish exemption to be unconstitutional. That parish exemption under the 1954 law says that ministers of the gospel don't pay any taxes on salary designated as a housing allowance. That allows ministers who are paid through a housing allowance to exclude it from taxable income. They may even use untaxed income to buy a home and deduct interest paid on the mortgage and their property taxes. That's known as double dipping. You'll recall that U.S. District Judge Barbara B. Crabb for the Western District of Wisconsin issued a strong 43-page decision on November 22nd in our favor, declaring the parish exclusion statute in the IRS codes unconstitutional. The appeal will go before the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals in Chicago. This preferential treatment of clergy is costing the government and the public up to $700 million a year in lost revenue. And it benefits not only ministers, but their employer churches, which can pay them less because untaxed income goes further. Christianity Today, the magazine, found that 84% of senior pastors receive a housing allowance ranging from $20,000 to $38,000 in added but not reported or taxed salary. Judge Crabb agreed with us that the act does not have a secular purpose or effect and that a reasonable observer would view it as an endorsement of religion.
So at the time of the federal ruling, Richard Bolton, who's the attorney representing us, made this comment that he felt the decision does not evince any hostility to religion, and it shouldn't even seem controversial. But boy, has it been controversial with clergy, and they're all lining up to submit unfriendly court briefs against FFRF. So, you know, that there's no secular purpose to this favoritism. The 1954 bill sponsor, Representative Peter Mack, argued ministers should be rewarded for carrying on a courageous fight against, quote, a godless and anti-religious world movement. So this is clearly unconstitutional, and there's no special burden that ministers have, as Crabb noted, and no reason why paying taxes on housing is any more burdensome for them than the millions of others who do.
Annie Laurie and I are the primary plaintiffs in this lawsuit as co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Crabb agreed we have standing to sue. We're injured because part of our salary is designated as a housing allowance, but we don't get to claim that exclusion.
And everybody knows we're right. This law is unconstitutional, and if reason prevails and the Constitution prevails, we will prevail. And we hope if you're not a member of FFRF, you will sign up with us today, because appeals before the Seventh Circuit are expensive and your membership dues will help support that work. And we have a lot of other important news that happened this week that we couldn't get to. You can go to FFRF.org, look at the news link for news releases about our important activity against vouchers, for example, and we'll talk more about that next week.
Stay tuned for a musical remembrance of Pete Seeger and then a fun interview with an atheist filmmaker who is tackling a lot of important topics. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this past week we were all saddened by the death of folk singer, songwriter, and progressive activist Pete Seeger, who died at the age of 94. His best-known songs include Where Have All the Flowers Gone, which was an anti-Vietnam War ballad, If I Had a Hammer, Turn, Turn, Turn. He was one of the folk singers responsible for popularizing We Shall Overcome. he exchanged the words that were originally "We will overcome" to "shall," and it really caught on and became the civil rights anthem of the 1960s.
Pete Seeger was not a religious man. Early in his life, he called himself an atheist, but he later came to hold some pantheistic beliefs, claiming that God is everything. He didn't join a church, and when he was asked by Belief.net what religion he might feel most comfortable with, Pete Seeger cited the creedless Unitarian Church, of which his mother had been a member, because he'd like to join the church in order to sing in the choir.
And so, Dan, I don't know about you, but my favorite memory of him is the only time I think I ever heard him sing in person, and it was quite a moment. It was 2003, bitterly cold. We were at the huge anti-war rally march prior to the invasion of Iraq in 2003 in New York City, and we were all imprisoned in these carrels, and there were police on horses, and they had dogs. It was really not very nice, and it was hard to hear, and it was cold, and it was tense. And then on comes Pete Seeger with hardly any voice left. He said, I don't have much voice. Let's all sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And it came in waves, and it was wonderful and soothing and hopeful. And we realized later that, of course, Pete Seeger would have known, Yip Harburg would have known, the man who wrote the words Somewhere Over the Rainbow, who was an ardent atheist. And it was just a lovely moment.
And the whole thing he did a cappella, too.
Yes. And he also popularized the English version of the song Die Gedankens sind frei, which is a 15th century protest song, a German freethought anthem that you, Dan, often usually sing to open conventions. It means thoughts are free, and yeah, it's very free thinking. But what we thought we would play for you today is this very clever rewriting that Pete Seeger did of the fundamentalist song, Give Me That Old Time Religion.
Well, a lot of people confused looking around the world today. There's all kinds of religions. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. We will pray with Aphrodite. We will pray with Aphrodite. She wears that see-through nightie, and it's good enough for me. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. We will pray with Zarathustra. We'll pray just like we used to. I'm a Zarathustra booster, and it's good enough for me. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. We will pray with those Egyptians. Build pyramids to put our crypts in. Cover subways with inscriptions, and it's good enough for me. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. We will pray with those old druids. They drink fermented fluids, waltzing naked through the woods, and it's good enough for me. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. It's good enough for me. We'll do dances to bring water, sacrifice animals for slaughter, sacrifice our sons and daughters, and that's good enough for me. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me.
I'll arise at early morning when my Lord gives me the warning that the solar age is dawning, and that's good enough for me. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. And that was Pete Seeger singing the irreverent old-time religion. He died this past week at the age of
1994, after a long, full life working and fighting for the progressive and liberal and tolerant and aesthetic and pacifist views that gave his life so much meaning and enriched the world. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and stay tuned. We are going to talk with Scott Burdick, a North Carolina artist, professional painter, who's also an important free-thinking documentary filmmaker. His most recent project is called In Reason We Trust, about the Reason Rally. He's also documented a huge problem about a Christian flag and a veterans memorial in King, North Carolina. Done an interview about the Good News Club invasions and about Harold Camping. So don't want to miss that coming right up.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land.
And that is Pete Seeger. If he had a hammer, he'd hammer out love to the world. This is Free Thought Radio. We were sad to hear that Pete Seeger died this past week at the age of 94. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And Scott Burdick is on the phone with us from North Carolina. And he's an artist, a professional painter who displays in many galleries around the country. And he's also a documentary filmmaker whose most recent project is called In Reason We Trust. And it's mainly about the Reason Rally that took place in Washington, D.C. in 2012. But he's also done other documentaries, In God We Trust, and that was about a furor over a Christian flag on a veterans memorial in King, North Carolina, and something called Sophia Investigates the Good News Club, and that is a half-hour documentary shot at one of the Good News Club spectaculars in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it involved Catherine Stewart, who's written a book about it, and free thought activist Sue. I'm not sure how to say Sue Kocher. Coker?
Right.
Is that right, Coker?
Kocher.
Kocher. I know Sue, but I just don't have to pronounce her last name. Sue Kocher. And many of the other volunteers of the Triangle Free Thought Society, which is FFRF's very lively chapter there in Raleigh. And Sophia Investigates the Good News Club debuted a year ago at the San Francisco Atheist Film Festival. And he's also just he's doing something on Harold Camping. So, well, it's time to bring you on to the show, Scott Burdick.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an honor. I've listened to you guys for a long time, so it's pretty fun.
So you're the real thing. You are a professional artist, painter, you display in galleries, and you also do filmmaking. So kind of like Pete Seeger, if I had a camera, you probably have a lot to say about the importance of art in influencing the world.
Yeah, and you know that Pete Seeger is somebody that I really admire, an artist, because you know when you have a certain ability like you do with music, or Pete Seeger did with music, or whether it's writing or filmmaking or painting, I think that there is a little bit of a a duty that you have to use that for things that you believe in, and so it's not just about making money. I make a lot of money from my painting, and so you have a lot of free time, and so these films that I make, I don't make any money from them. They're just great to do to try and, you know, share the things that I've learned as an artist from traveling to other countries to the things that I see around me. And too many times I have a lot of friends who are artists, very successful, and they will tell me, oh, you know, I'm an atheist as well, but, you know, I don't want to say anything about that or anything political or anything about religion because I don't want to turn off people who might buy my paintings or whatever their field of art is, and I think that's a tragedy because, you know, the hammer of art has been used for, you know, religious views for a long time, and if we are going to sideline our talents in, you know, putting forward the things that we've learned, I think, you know, it's a great loss to humanity, really.
So you sell and display in galleries all over the country or maybe all over the world. What do you paint?
I paint whatever I find interesting. So, I have shows in museums and in galleries. From my wife and I are both artists, and we learned in Chicago. So we've been doing this professionally for nearly 30 years. And so we'll go to Tibet, say, or Africa for a month or 2 months, and we'll paint tribal people there. We'll travel to remote areas, South America, China, all over the place. And we went to Guatemala last year for a month and rented a place, and before that we'd been in Turkey for a couple months. And so I love just painting things that I'm interested in. So often it's things that I don't necessarily know a lot about. And so when I go there, I like to immerse myself in the culture, read about the history, meet the people, talk to them about their religion. I'm not trying to preach my non-belief in whatever it is, Islam or whatever it is. I'm more interested on those trips in learning what they think and their history and seeing the effects on their society. And so then that goes into my paintings, and some things aren't said very well with a painting. So that's when I will write something, or I will make a film about it. And so, yeah, it's about me learning, but it's also then about those things that I learn, trying to convey them to other people.
So you have a webpage about your painting?
Yeah, my wife and I both have our paintings on my website. It's just myname.com, so scottburdick.com.
B-U-R-D-I-C-K, Scott Burdick.
That's right, yeah, B-U-R-D-I-C-K. And my wife's name is Susan Lyon, and you know, she has her own different religious views than me. And that's the great thing, is all of us kind of, you know, do our part in searching for what we find to be, you know, true and correct. And for me, atheism was just a huge part of my life growing up a Catholic in Chicago. And when I decided that I didn't believe it in high school from reading history, I felt extremely isolated. And, you know, because I didn't know anybody who really wasn't a Catholic. And so it was for several years, I just stopped going to church but didn't really tell anybody that I didn't believe. And so things like the Reason Rally, I really understand a lot of the people like that I interview in the film, both people who were speakers there. We had it's like a who's who of the atheist movement.
You're talking about the In Reason We Trust film.
Right, In Reason We Trust, where I... you know, went to the Reason Rally, and we interviewed the people who spoke and performed, like you and Annie Laurie and Richard Dawkins and Bad Religion. But we also interviewed people who just came there, some people who weren't atheists for very long and some that had been, and many of them had that same sense of isolation because they live where they're really afraid because of boycotting or of whatever. That was certainly something that was a big theme in God We Trust about King, North Carolina, where people were afraid, and they had rallies where they said we should encourage people to leave that aren't Christian, and they said they would boycott people's businesses who said that they weren't Christian and that separated church and state.
Well, before we talk about that, why don't we have a little bit of an audio from your In Reason We Trust documentary. Can we listen to that?
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah.
There's too many people trying to deny actual facts about the world in order to promote their beliefs, which this equation doesn't work to anybody's benefit. I don't care what anybody believes about an original tipper of dominoes, but when it comes to denying things that are in front of us, you're actually dragging us backwards.
You know, if somebody's going to be making decisions about science policy, I want to know if they think the Earth was created 6,000 years ago.
It couldn't be much more than, you know, 5,000-6,000 years old. And so, you know, things in science do not challenge, you know, me and my faith. I believe everything the Bible says. If God said he put all those animals in the ark in a cracker box, I would believe it.
They state that they will automatically and thoughtlessly reject any and all evidence that stands against their predetermined conclusions.
But it reminded me of a quote I read yesterday by somebody called Gregory House, who I later discovered was actually a fictional character, but never mind, it was a good quote. He's something like, if you could reason with religious people, there wouldn't be any religious people.
And that's about 1 minute of the 90-minute version of Scott Burdick's documentary, In Reason We Trust. We heard Adam Savage of Mythbusters, Greta Christina, and the Bible Believer. It was actually a North Carolina representative. His name is Brian Holloway, who thinks the animals could have fit in a shoebox.
That's actually my representative, my state representative.
Oh, really?
You have our sympathy.
We heard Aaron Ra, and then we ended up with Richard Dawkins.
Who could mistake that mellifluous voice? Voice
yeah,
of reason.
And
can you tell us how people can watch this?
Well, people can watch any of the documentaries that I've made. They go to film festivals as well, so you can watch for that. But the greatest thing is the web, you know, the Internet. So if you just go to Scott Burdick Art on YouTube, or even just put my name in, it'll usually come up first because they've had a lot of views.
So Scott,
they can watch them for free, and they can embed them on their own website. So yeah.
Scott Burdick, S-C-O-T-T, Burdick, B-U-R-D-I-C-K, Art is
right.
How you can find them. And what a treat. And I think we have time to, before this segment ends, to just briefly talk about, I think, what was your first documentary that you were referring to, which is In God We Trust, ?
Right.
And how did you come to make that?
And that was the first one that I made, actually. I hadn't done film in many, many years. In North Carolina, there was this controversy where a veteran, Stephen Hewitt, had come back from Afghanistan and had found that in our public park, on our public Veterans Memorial, they had put, with all the other flags, a Christian flag. And he complained and kind of said, well, you know, I'm not Christian. I think that we should just have the American flag. And it turned into an uproar over that. They had a rally where 5,000 people came and, you know, said we should run Christians out. And when I saw that, I was so upset.
The rally didn't say we should run Christians out, did they?
Oh, I'm sorry. It said that we should run people who weren't Christian out of town. And I was so upset by that my first reaction was I told my wife that I wanted to put our house up for sale the next day and move because I didn't want to live in a place with such intolerance. But then I thought about it, and then I decided that I would just kind of in my spare time cover it for a year and a half. And so I interviewed people out there and made this film. And the interesting thing was and that's where I interviewed Brian Holloway as well, our state representative, who also in the film, In God We Trust, also says that we should bring back the anti-sodomy laws and lock up homosexuals, as several other legislators I interviewed in North Carolina said. And so, so that's why I made it. And people just assumed, nobody asked me for 8 months what my religious views were. They assumed that I was an atheist, that I was Christian. And even people would tell me, oh, well, you know, you can tell an atheist because they have the devil in their eyes. And which was, I didn't put those in, you know, because it just seemed like it would be making fun of them. But somebody finally asked me what my religious views were, and I told them I was an atheist. And, of course, after that, nobody would talk to me, but I'd already interviewed everybody. And, and then I got, threats and things like that because they were afraid that what I would do. And which was interesting because that film, because it was a very controversial issue, I never do any narration or anything. It's just their views, like Brian Holloway. And so I presented both sides, and I had John Ragosta, who's a great historian on where separation of church and state came from. But people were very upset still, and so it was kind of sad.
So that is one of, I think it's four documentaries you've now made. We're talking with Scott Burdick, who's an artist and a filmmaker from North Carolina. And we haven't yet really talked about Sophia Investigates the Good News Club and the film that you made with Harold Camping. So we're going to come back in the final segment and talk to Scott Burdick about that. So can you hang in there, Scott?
You bet.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking with filmmaker Scott Burdick. He filmmakes on the side. He's a distinguished artist whose artwork appears in galleries around the world, and he's making these contributions to reason and free thought, and we've been talking about how he documented the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. So, Scott, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you.
Can you tell us more about this intriguing-sounding documentary, Sophia Investigates the Good News Club? Who is Sophia?
Sophia is a high school student who started a secular student club at her school, at her high school. And it was very interesting because it's like I hesitate to even call this my film because it is so much like most films, But this one especially is a collaboration between a lot of people. And it was Sue Kocher's real idea. And, I mean, I actually was so busy with shows and other art things that she had to really twist my arm. She's like, no, this is very important. You have to read Catherine Stewart's book, and we have to go. They've never been able to get footage talking to the people because they won't allow you into these Good News Clubs. So she kind of came up with this plan to have Sophia be more of the front person, to be interviewing people at this gala. And so I wrote down some questions for her, and then she came up with some of her own. And so we go to this just to talk to people about what the Good News Club is. And then we interviewed Catherine Stewart, several other of my friends who are excellent filmmakers. Then I just edited it and put it together. But it was pretty shocking to me once I read Catherine's book, and even more shocking when I interviewed people to see what they were doing and the way they were trying to take over public schools and train children to go and proselytize to other children in the school, and how it tears the schools apart. And when I interviewed them, when both me and Sophia interviewed the people, it was very interesting because they talked about the fact that they didn't think there was anything wrong with targeting other people's children in public schools because they were so certain that they were going to go to hell if they weren't converted. And so they even use the analogy with me that it would be like if you knew somebody was going to be murdered down the street, you would stop them. You might even tie them up or keep them from going down that road. And so by that logic, almost anything then is okay. And it was pretty interesting.
Now, I have to put in a plug for Sophia because she and her sister were one of my favorite out-of-closet billboards that FFRF has worked on. And this was this out-of-the-closet project with the Triangle Chapter a few years ago. And she and her sister came out in their small town on this billboard where they had experienced some unfriendly reactions to their free thought views at their high school.
Right.
So she's a brave kid. And is she now still in high school or is she in college?
I think she's just about to go to college, if I remember correctly. I think she was a junior when we filmed that. But I could be wrong. Maybe off to college now. And it was great, too, because when the film was debuted at in San Francisco, they had offered to fly me out there and stuff and speak. They also had a couple other movies, Kumari and The Unbelievers, and so they were going to have all the directors come out to speak. And I couldn't because I'd already had something else that I had promised to do at a museum. And so it was really nice. They brought Sophia and her mother out. Mm. Dead, and they actually got to do the question and answer and all that, and so it was really a wonderful experience for her and for the people to see this young free thinker. And it's, you know, she represents really the hope for the future, you know, these new young activists, in my view.
And I want to remind people that you can watch for free all of Scott Burdick's wonderful documentaries at his YouTube channel, Scott Burdick Art, or look up Scott Burdick and it will come up. And this is Sophia Investigates the Good News Club. But I have a question, Scott. You refer to this as Good News Club Spectaculars. What do you mean by that? What was this event that you and Sophia covered?
Well, of course, we could not get to actually go in schools. They wouldn't allow anybody to film them in schools, what they do. So the closest we could get is they put these spectaculars on at the State Fair. And so they rent out a giant building, and they have all of these rides and stuff for children. And so they get children come in as a free event, but the catch is to ride their biggest ride that everybody wants to ride, all the kids want to ride. You have to go into this room and get a talking to by their volunteers. And they have about 50 young volunteers who are trained to do this, and they tell the kids that, about the dangers of, not believing in Jesus and going to hell, and have all of these points in this. It's a wordless book. It's actually, they give them a book that's just colors that represent, one represents death, one represents Jesus' resurrection. And then
I remember that when I was a preacher in the 60s, the wordless book.
Exactly. And it helps because kids that are too young to read, they can, you songs, this sort of thing can remind them of these lessons. Well, so a lot of parents would get there not even knowing that this was going to happen.
May I say, if they're too young to read, they're too young to be given a book talking about Jesus' death and resurrection.
And the blood and the sacrifice.
This is ridiculous. Mm.
Well, the people I interview, they disagree. They, in fact, they said in the interviews, in the film, that you have to get kids. They quoted the statistic that if you're going to find Jesus, it has to be done between the ages of 4 and 14. After that, it's kind of a lost cause, they said. I think he said 85% of people that are believers are in that age group, which is very telling, you know, because it is before the age of reason, basically.
And the problem with this is that they're doing this Good News Evangelical Club in the public schools. That's the state church.
Because the Supreme Court, in its vast unwisdom, said that that was constitutional.
Exactly.
So we have a real fight on our hands. And so this film provides a lot of insight, so don't miss it. So let's recap. What are the three films that you can find on your YouTube channel, Scott Burdick Art?
Well, I have In God We Trust, In Reason We Trust, and Sophia Investigates the Film, Good News Club. But I also have put on some of the full interviews, like of Dan Barker, and I'll be putting the one I did with you, and I have one with Richard Dawkins and Richard Carrier, because those you can only get clips in these films. So.
Yeah, I remember that. You spent all that time interviewing me last fall.
That's right. You have great
patience.
Oh, you were wonderful. Gosh, it was. You're just so fun to interview, and it was fun to juxtapose some of your comments, especially when in the film In Reason We Trust, where the girl's crying about hell, and then you have your comments saying, you know, smile, there is no hell. So
we're out of time, Scott. Sorry, Scott Burdick is a painter and a filmmaker. You can find his work at Scott Burdick Art on YouTube. We'll have to have him back on to talk about his experiences with Harold Camping in The End of the World. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to our webpage to find out more about Freethought Radio, which is ffrf.org/news/radio.
The January-February 24-page paper edited by Bill Dunn is chock full of fascinating news and updates. You can get a complimentary issue at ffrf.org or join us there. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.